for those who know every line, and for those finding Star Wars for the very first time, welcome to Growing Up Skywalker.
Welcome to Growing Up Skywalker. My name is Anna.
I'm Sam.
And we have an incredibly special guest this week, Tim Beisiegel from the FSF Podcast. Tim, will you introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Tim from the FSF Podcast. Howdy, howdy, howdy.
Tim, will you tell us a little bit about yourself and about FSF?
Yeah, absolutely. So I am a lifelong Star Wars fan, massive nerd, geek, all the fun things. And I am a big fan, of course, of your guys' show and the way you guys do things over here. So I'm always excited when I get a chance to talk with the Growing Up Skywalkerians. So, but yeah, our show, FSF Popcast, is a weekly interview podcast with all the people that you love in sci-fi and pop culture, from Star Wars, Star Trek, Battlestar Galactica, Stargate, etc. Name a fandom. We've tried to at least to interview them if we haven't already succeeded in getting them. But yeah, that's our show in a nutshell. And we live by the tagline, all nerdy, no dirty. That's kind of how we roll.
Yeah. If you have ever wanted to know what was happening behind the scenes of your favorite sci-fi show or book or comic or any form of sci-fi media, I would bet money that they've been on FSF. It is just an incredible archive of sci-fi creators and content. And aww, we love FSF so much.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So welcome to the show. Today we are doing a single header. We are doing Rebels Season 3, Episode 20, Twin Suns.
Sam and I sat down to watch this last night and he said, okay, see you on the other side. And I was like, what side? And now I know. It is the side where Darth Maul is dead.
Darth Maul is dead, but how does it ensue?
All right, we open Twin Suns on the blazing heat of Tatooine. Maul is staggering through the desert. He's near death. He's looking for Obi-Wan Kenobi. He's muttering to himself. He's hallucinating. He's like, this is how I'm gonna die. But no, he decides he's gonna stick it out to stick one to Obi-Wan Kenobi. And he's like, I know exactly what I need to do.
Well, and he screams into the void, Kenobi!
Yeah, that just looked so liberating. I'm so jealous of the way that Darth Maul lives his life. Okay, so he decides to lay a trap for Kenobi. So on the ghost, deep in the night, two voices come out of the dark. One is the old holocron of Kenobi from the Fall of the Jedi Temple. And the other is Maul's voice coming from the Sith holocron screaming, Kenobi! Ezra hears it. He is convinced that Maul is back and that Master Kenobi is not only alive, but in danger. He wants to rescue him from the depths of the Tatooine Desert. But the Spectres are prepping for their big invasion on the Imperial facility in Lothal. Hera forbids him to go. Ezra goes, deuces, Mom, and steals an A-Wing and takes off with Chopper as a stowaway. They end up landing on Tatooine. The A-Wing is immediately demolished by Tusken Raiders. So they just walk out into the desert and get stuck in a sandstorm, almost end up dying themselves. And then as Ezra is near death, he starts hallucinating Maul. And Maul is whispering to him, draw him out. You know, you failed. You failed your family. You failed your friends. And
you're the reason that Kenobi is dead.
You're the reason that Kenobi is dead. Ezra is haunted by this hallucination. He realizes it's just a mirage. Chopper ends up running out of battery, and Ezra is on the brink of giving up. He's cradling Chopper. He passes out in the desert, and then someone wearing a tattered brown cloak and very sensible shoes strides up, finds him in the desert. It is Jedi Master Obi-Wan Kenobi. Ezra wakes up in the middle of Kenobi's campsite. There's a fire blazing, and he's like, Master Kenobi, I found you. I was looking for you. You're in danger. Maul, the Sith, I need to take you back to the rebellion. We're going to take down the Empire. And Obi-Wan is like, None of that sounds like anything that I am planning on doing. So, most importantly, he tells Ezra, obviously this was a trap. You walked right into it. It's okay. It is my responsibility to get you out of this. However, the only one who is benefiting from this situation is
me.
And Darth Maul strides out of the darkness. And Obi-Wan is like, okay, Ezra, giddy up, get out of here, get gone.
Past your bedtime.
So Obi-Wan puts Ezra on his blurg and says, go north, I will take care of this.
It is a dewback, not a blurg. Nowhere, less mouth, more lizard.
Thank you for that. I was like, have we met blurgs? I was unclear. Okay, Maul takes out his lightsaber, double-bladed. Obi-Wan takes out his, single-bladed. They look at each other for a long time. And then finally, Maul snarls. He leaps towards Kenobi, and it is over in three moves. Kenobi parries once, slashes downward, and just gets Maul absolutely perpendicular to the last time that he tried to slice Maul in half. And then cradles Maul as he dies. And Maul is saying, I'm sorry, Sam.
No, you just dropped a great joke, right? As like we're talking about Maul dying, and I'm
I have a bad habit of doing that, it's true. So Obi-Wan is cradling Maul. Maul is dying. Maul says, tell me, the person that you're protecting here, is it the chosen one? Obi-Wan says, he is. And Maul says, good, he will avenge us. And then Kenobi closes Maul's eyelids over his dead eyes. Because he's dead. And Ezra gets home safe to the Spectres. And we close the episode on Obi-Wan Kenobi watching over Luke Skywalker, the chosen one. Apparently.
Maybe.
Unclear. Much to talk about. So that is Twin Sons. What do y'all want to talk about?
So much.
Are you crying, Tim?
A little bit. No. But no, for the sake of this conversation, no, I'm not.
You're allowed. You can have feelings. We have feelings on this podcast all the time.
I cried last episode.
No, this is both a very cool episode to me and a very sad episode to me because, as you both know, I have a very large affinity for Darth Maul.
He's your favorite character, right?
Next to Han Solo, he's my favorite character. Han Solo is my number one, and then it's like 1A down to Darth Maul. He is my absolute favorite villain of the show. And just because there's so many nuances to his character, and he's not just a villain. He's a villain with nuance, and he's so beautifully built throughout the Clone Wars. But it's sad to me because this is my last time that I get to see him. You know, this is, he's done. So anything now that we see of Darth Maul in future Star Wars works has to be before this Twin Sons episode. Because, you know, there's my old adage, anything Star Wars, no body, no death. Well, we have a body. We see the body. He is dead. He is dead in Kenobi's arms. So yeah, sad face for me. But I'll get over it. Maybe.
Oh.
Yeah. So Anna, in one of our earlier episodes in Rebels with Maul, you talked about how small Maul's ambitions seem to be now that instead of running this intergalactic crime ring and, you know, going toe-to-toe with Palpatine, now he's just down to the vengeance and going after Kenobi. But then at the end of this episode, he says he will avenge us both. Mm-hmm. So how do you feel about Maul's motivations at the end of this?
Well, that's actually a question that I wanted to parry and send over to Tim. So
sure.
I'm going to not answer yet because Tim, I wanted to know, because Darth Maul is one of your very favorite characters.
Right.
And we on this podcast have spent a lot of time thinking about Maul's ever shrinking motivations. As Sam said. So what did you think about Maul's character arc from The Phantom Menace all the way through The Clone Wars, through every instance where we've seen him, to his death in Rebels?
Other than the words, more please, I have enjoyed his character arc. Now, on the one hand, I'm going to slightly disagree with you guys. I don't think he has shrinking intentions or shrinking aspirations. I think that the overall arching aspiration of his has always been to destroy Kenobi. Everything else has facilitated that. So when he was running the crime syndicate and all those other things, that was so that he could get to Kenobi and he could build up an army. He could build up all these things and he could have the resources at hand to go fight Kenobi when, you know, and do the things that were necessary. Because he tried doing it with Savage and that was not enough. And he realized that. So he went from there to going to get Death Watch and realized that wasn't enough. Okay, so now I need the crime syndicate. And eventually that was not enough. So he was always trying to figure out a way to figure out how he was going, where he was going to be in times, in the time of Order 66 and how his former master's grand plan was going to come to fruition. And then it was, how am I going to avenge myself against Obi-Wan Kenobi for cutting me in half and making me half the man I used to be? Some Temple Pilots reference. Anyway, you know, and so that to me has always been his overarching ambition. That's always the top of it. Everything else facilitates and feeds into that.
It just begs the question for Kenobi, why are you so obsessed with me? So when we first see Maul, he is really on the up and up. He's a Sith apprentice. He's highly skilled. Mm-hmm. He's shiny and new, and he defeats Qui-Gon really with alacrity, comes up against Kenobi. Kenobi is fueled by vengeance, by reaction, mm-hmm. and really should have finished him off in that moment. And so it almost seems like at that moment in Phantom Menace, Maul's upward trajectory stopped. And the fact that everything in his life was in service to vengeance, was in service to Kenobi, it just seems like he had so much potential. And his whole life revolved around this one person. And it just seems very, very sad.
See, I read it to be that Maul, throughout the Clone Wars, especially in his first, that season 4, season 5 stuff where he's getting together with Savage, it almost seems more to me like he's going after Palpatine. And that's the ambition that I feel that he has let go of after getting so soundly defeated by Palpatine in that cool fight with Savage and Maul versus Palpatine where Savage dies. Because I think Maul recognizes that he wanted to be a Sith, and then he had to keep moving forward in some capacity or the other. And so he follows this other path and sort of is like, I'm not a Sith, I'm a cool Sith. And it doesn't work for him because a real Sith Lord comes by and beats the crap out of him. And eventually he's sprung by Death Watch and then, you know, does all the Mandalorian stuff in season 7. So perhaps he's looking at that as an ambition that he wasn't able to fulfill and decided it was never really his ambition, that because he had so fully committed to not being a Sith. And we see that in Rebels when we first meet him as the old master, because he's like, I'm a force wielder, but I'm not Sith. I want to destroy the Sith. So I think he sees in himself someone who's profoundly revolutionary.
See, and I took that initial run with Darth Maul to be not that he was trying to get vengeance against Palpatine, but more that he was trying to prove himself, because I see abandonment in all of that. He feels very abandoned, left behind. He mentioned several times that I was second to the most powerful personage in the universe. And then he feels like he was left for dead, left for nothing, left behind. And so he's trying to prove himself, prove his worth from when we first see him with the crazy spider legs and everything else there, to getting his new legs through the Night Sisters, then getting his second set of legs from Lieutenant Dan.
in the Death Watch. Actually the canonical name of that Mandalorian armorer. Yeah.
Fascinating.
So he's getting his Lieutenant Dan legs, you know, and for me, all throughout those times, he's proving himself. He's proving himself, and I never felt that he was trying to get even with Palpatine. I think he knew that in his heart of hearts, he had no chance of beating him. And so I don't think he was wanting to go after him from the standpoint of, I'm going to defeat him. I think he wanted to prove himself as worthy and that he was still a viable candidate to be his apprentice, even though at the time he had Dooku.
I think that is supported by what he says, because when he is found out and Palpatine is like, hey, you guys need a, I'm calling a timeout on the Senate. I have a very urgent business on Mandalore. And he shows up outside Satine's throne room and he's like, you are a usurper. And he takes out Maul. That might be actually empowering for Maul to hear that, like, hey, at least I was a contender to be a Sith. Yeah. I wasn't just, you know, some
jabroni. He was seen as a very real threat at that moment because of the power that he was gaining and the fact that he did have Savage as his apprentice there with him. And Savage was as powerful as he was because of, you know, what the Night Sisters had imbued him with.
Ugh, my big sad baby. I love Savage so much.
I like that read, particularly because it contrasts. And so in our universe, we watched, we got to see this in the order of Clone Wars came out, and then Rebels came out, and then Kenobi came out. But then in the Growing Up Skywalker timeline, we watched Kenobi first because it canonically took place like 10 years before this.
Right.
And that was with this rise of Inquisitors. And the Inquisitors are basic, I mean, as far as we know, the Inquisitors are all dead at the end of season two of Rebels. And so we've separated out what it actually means to be someone who wields a red lightsaber. And in the same way that the Jedi have really culled who is a Jedi, I mean, have been culled down to becoming a Jedi is now a profoundly personal process. There's no school to go to for Jedi. You have to actually go out and learn it yourself and seek it out. It's now true of the Sith as well. And I wonder if that is also part of bringing balance to the Force, because at this point, there is a lot fewer people with lightsabers red or blue in the galaxy.
Agreed.
Hmm. Yeah. So because I'm thinking about Maul and I'm thinking about Savage and I'm thinking about apprentices and I'm thinking about masters, I'm curious what the two of you think about what Maul represented to Ezra, because their paths crossed a lot over the course of Rebels. And Maul has this very teasing thing he likes to say about Ezra, which is that Ezra is his apprentice, which is patently untrue.
I mean, is it?
Is it? Yeah, so that's the question. So what do you think Maul's journey and Maul's presence meant to Ezra, and what does his death represent?
So if you are one of our Patreons, we watched the Visions, and there are two Visions season two episodes where someone kind of becomes a Sith apprentice without realizing it. There's the Journey to the Darkhead? Yeah, Journey to the Darkhead and Screecher's Reach. And in both cases, the protagonist, who is either a small factory child or an actual Jedi.
Well, there's also Akakiri.
Yeah, there's Akakiri. So those three have these moments where someone joins the dark side kind of without realizing it. And that is actually what Anakin did when he became Darth Vader. It all of a sudden, all the pieces fell into place and it was the last domino. And all of a sudden he's like, oh crap, I'm a Sith Lord. And that, I think, is perhaps how the Sith recruit things, is that they put you in play and, you know, they groom you along to be, hey, like, what if you were using your Force powers and you don't like necessarily do patently evil things? What you do is just one thing after another until your brain is trained to just do the Sith thing. And I think that that's what Maul's relationship with Ezra probably is meant to be, but I'm of the opinion that Maul is not Sith. And so he's kind of coming up with a Sith curricula, a Sithicula on the fly. And so however he's trying to train Ezra, he does good work on Malachor of getting him to be part of the dark side, and that works. And when he blinds Kanan, that opens up a way for them to like start drawing on the power of the dark side, but it's not enough for various reasons. I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that Maul himself is distracted by Kenobi.
Yeah. Hmm. I agree with a lot of that. I think that Maul is no longer a Sith. He is Sith-esque, Sith light. You know, he's on the outside edge. He's doing a lot of the same things, but he's not paying strict notice to all the tenets and all the things that the Sith would have done, you know, back then. And I do agree that there was, with Ezra, there was a sense of grooming there, because he was trying to find himself. Again, he's still trying to prove himself worthy and trying to build himself up to a point, I think, where he could have someone to help him defeat Obi-Wan. So he was looking at, you know, here's this young, powerful force wielder who has anger, who has abandonment issues, who has all these things because of the way that Ezra lost his parents and all the things that he had gone through emotionally and mentally over the years. In the first couple seasons that we see him in Rebels, Ezra's going through a lot, trying to discover who he is, where he is, how he fits into this storyline. And I think Maul really plays into that, especially the Old Master episode is like, that's like grooming 101. He's setting the table right there all of that. I don't think that Ezra was ever knowledgeably his apprentice, but I do think he was his apprentice all the same. From the standpoint that he was doing things that were required, you know, the opening of the Sith holocrons, the doing, you know, all the things that Bendu would tell him not to do something. And Ezra's like, I can do it, no problem. It's the same thing that we saw with Anakin. Don't go do the thing. No problem. I'm going to go do the thing. And the thing led him to the dark side. You know, it's the same kind of same thing that we saw in Ezra, because Ezra started following the direction, the teaching of that Sith holocron. I think it was at the start of season 3, was it?
Yeah, where he force dominates that ATDP pilot to shoot those guys. And everyone's like, whoa, you didn't just get a haircut.
Right. And so he's tapping into his anger. He's tapping into the emotions, the Sith side of things. Those are the things that Maul directed him to. So for a while, yes, he was dual apprenticing. He was learning how to be both a plumber and an electrician at the same time, you know, in this sense.
He was also Hondo's apprentice in this time. So he was also learning how to be a hedge fund manager or whatever.
Very true. He was apprenticing in triplicate. That is very true. So yeah, I mean, knowledgeably, was he Maul's apprentice? No, I don't think that it was ever a conscious thing for Ezra to go, yeah, I'm Maul's apprentice and this is what's happening. And so for Maul to call him apprentice throughout the rest of the episodes was accurate. He was Maul's apprentice, but not on the surface, because he was puppeting Ezra for a lot of different things by the manipulation of the holocrons. Like we saw in the beginning of this episode, the use of, you know, and making the holocrons call out to get Ezra to go where he wanted him to go, to get Ezra to do the things that he wanted him to do.
Yeah, you make it sound like exposure therapy. Like, oh, if you can just try mustard 19 times, you'll start to like mustard. If you just follow Sith teachings 20 times in a light adjacent way, you will become Sith adjacent.
Yeah.
Right. Have you ever tried it on a house with a car, with a mouse, you know, whatever.
It's the same thing. Hey, wait a minute. This is hitting close to home. Real quick, Anna, what do you think about, do you believe that Ezra is a Sith apprentice or not?
No, I never did. And I think Ezra's interactions with Maul were actually meant to highlight the difference between what has been taken away from Maul and what has been taken away from Ezra. I think they are actually very similar people, but had very different circumstances. And I think we're supposed to see Ezra not falling to the dark side as a testament to having a family, whereas Maul had a family. It was Savage who was ripped away from him. And I think they're supposed to be dark mirrors of each other, where we see, Ezra was very, very close to falling to the dark side. However, he has, you know, not only his biological parents who passed away, but now he's got a foster mom, a foster dad. He's got Sabine, he's got Zeb, and he's got Chopper. And that is the single piece of straw that stands between him and the dark side, and it's strong enough.
Hmm.
Yeah. Now there's things coming up that you guys, that you haven't seen, Anna, that I'm not going to touch on, but there's other reasons why, you know, that make me say what I said, and those will all come to light in future episodes, and I'm just going to leave it at that. So, but
I love it.
So yeah, I'm gonna set the table for you a little bit, Anna, without you know, force feeding the turkey leg. So there are other episodes coming up, not only in Rebels, but other shows that are going to kind of highlight back to this, where you see that Ezra was really on the cusp of giving in to his dark side issues. And I think it's closer than you realize. And I think that you may agree. I think you'll see that. And that's not necessarily going to change your opinion of how Ezra moved and acted and all the things that you just said. But I do think it's going to color your opinion just a little bit differently and how you see Ezra moving forward. He's still a Jedi. He's still great in a lot of different ways. But there's some things. I'll just leave it at that. Okay. There's some things.
Yeah.
Some I'm things. Excited for that too.
Yeah. It's funny. We're reading Tamsin Muir's Lock Tomb series for our sci-fi book club right now. And Tamsin Muir, in the third book of the Lock Tomb series, Nona the Ninth, has this amazing line, "You can't take loved away." And I just don't know that Maul was loved enough in his life, but Ezra has been very, very loved by everyone around him. And I see that as the key differentiator between Maul and Ezra, and why Ezra maybe was at risk of falling to the dark side. But I guess we saw him come close and he was pulled out of it by love and by family.
I think his real danger. Yeah, I agree. I think another danger that he ran into is pride, though, because over and over again throughout season 3, and every time that Maul has met Ezra, and also every time Hondo's met Ezra, everyone's been like, "Why are you hanging out with literally the sketchiest people?" And he's like, "It's cool. I used to be sketchy. I know how to deal with sketchy people." And he keeps getting by the skin of his teeth. Mm-hmm. And so now that Maul has faced and died against Obi-Wan, it kind of changes, like, I feel like it sets home some really powerful things about Ezra of like how high the stakes for this were. And it ages him, because up until now, he's been like a youthful scamp doing youthful scamp things. And the danger has been from getting involved with these very dangerous circumstances and somehow getting out of them. And to the point where he's like, "It's okay. I've done it before." And that's probably what led him to Tatooine this time, because, you know, like, stealing an A-wing is probably a death sentence unless you bring back a better ship in the rebellion. And he does it, and everyone's like, "Hey, you okay, buddy?" And he's like, "Maul's dead." And that's like worth it, but I don't know. It makes the stakes seem a lot higher, even just for the rebellion, despite the fact that this episode really wasn't about the rebellion.
Yeah, interesting.
But it was.
It was, but spoilers.
Yeah.
Well, I think it was about the rebellion in the sense that Obi-Wan has the opportunity to join finally into the larger rebellion and decides not to, because he's looking after Luke Skywalker. So do we want to talk a little bit about Luke?
Sure.
We could. What I want to talk about real fast is the duel.
Oh, okay. We can talk about the duel.
I want to talk about the duel. I want to set the stage. So you, Anna, mentioned Nona the Ninth. I was thinking of a scene in Harrow the Ninth where Harrow, who does not know how to sword fight, is talking about something Gideon, who does know how to sword fight, would say of like, she'd probably say something like, "Nice footwork." And when we watch this fight, compared to every other fight we've seen, you can look at it. So Obi-Wan starts off and he's in Gemso, his Episode 4 form. His sword
Sam is
out.
Gesticulating wildly, just so you know.
His sword is out, is a normal sword fighting samurai stance. But first he starts off and he's like, "You came after the kid I'm protecting, so I'm going in Soryesu." And he does the thing, you know, two fingers, arm overhead. And then he goes to Gemso, which is a defensive neutral stance. And then he's like, "Wait a minute, I'm fighting Maul." And he goes into Ataru, which is the form that Qui-Gon taught him.
Ooh-hoo-hoo.
So if you watch this scene and the scene where Qui-Gon dies, Qui-Gon is in the exact same position as Obi-Wan is in. And Maul does the exact same triple spin flip, 9.7 from the Olympic Committee, goes in and goes for the chin with the hilt so he can stab through the heart.
So he killed Qui-Gon by bashing Qui-Gon against the forehead and then stabbing him, right?
But Obi-Wan defaults to a block using Soryasu, and then Ataru strikes right through him and cuts the hilt in half. It is literally three moves and it is perfect.
It is such a beautiful callback to Ahsoka in Tales of the Jedi when she disarms the Inquisitor and kills him with his own blade, and it takes 1.5 seconds.
To me, it really shows us that when we started in Phantom Menace with Maul, with Obi-Wan, with Qui-Gon, these are people who have like sword fought against training droids, and like, you know, it's learning karate in a dojo somewhere. And then after 20 years of war, they just know their stuff. And Obi-Wan particularly. Obi-Wan is, in the Kenobi show, we see that he can still beat Darth Vader, which means he is, in fact, the best lightsaber duelist in the galaxy. And so Maul goes up and is like, I'm going to try this move. And Obi-Wan's like, you realize I've had nothing to do except for try to commune with Qui-Gon, watch over this kid while being yelled at by his step-parents, and like negotiate with Jawa and think about this exact moment, Maul. Like, I've been calculating this for 10 long years on how to kill you if you decide to mess with me. And here you are messing with me. I love it.
Now, he didn't talk about this when he was on our show, but if you've ever had a chance, go watch Sam Witwer talk about this scene.
We didn't get to because spoilers, but I have been so excited to.
Okay, yes, so now that you've seen this scene, you need to go back and watch Sam Witwer talk about this, because he talks about it from Maul's point of view and Maul's mindset and the way that he sees I don't know all the fancy defensive stances that Sam was just spouting off there, but he does go through and he talks about how, you know, Obi-Wan starts off in his old stance with the two fingers out and the sword up behind his head. And then he changes to the defensive stance. And then he changes to the Qui-Gon. And you can see this. If you go back and you watch the Twin Suns episode in that fight, when Obi-Wan goes to the Qui-Gon stance, watch Maul's eyes.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Because Maul's eyes get big and he's like, I know what to do. I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to kill him the same way I killed his master.
Yeah,
because in his mind, he's like, oh, that's, I've already beat this move. I know how to do this. And so he goes after Kenobi the same way he went after Qui-Gon, because it was the similar stance. He Obi-Wan leaned into Maul's own ambition and his own sense of self-worth and his own pride, you know, giving him this false sense of security that you beat it once, you can beat it again.
It feels like Obi-Wan baited and set a trap for Maul inside of the trap that Maul thought he set for Obi-Wan. Mm-hmm. And I think it's so beautiful, because when Ezra comes up to Obi-Wan at the campsite and he's like, I'm here, come back with me, you're in danger, join the rebellion, we'll take down the Sith. And Obi-Wan is like, no, I will not be doing that. And I'm also not afraid of Maul. You don't stay alive as long as I have by being foolish or unprepared. And I just love how much growth is implicit in that statement, where we have seen Obi-Wan fight Maul half a dozen times across all of the different appearances, from Phantom to Clone Wars to Rebels.
There are three battles before this that they have. This is their fourth duel.
Yeah. And so they have been dueling across the decades. And the growth that Obi-Wan has done was, Maul is no longer a contender to him. Maul is a miserable person that he needs to put out of his misery.
Right.
Like, it's been long enough that Maul has wrapped his entire life around Kenobi. And Kenobi is being merciful at this point.
And the funny thing about that is that when Maul shows up and he's pissed and he turns on one of his blades and he puts out the fire, And he says, why are you out here? What are you doing? Perhaps you're protecting something or someone. And then Kenobi turns on his blade because he's like, well, now I got to kill this guy. But Obi-Wan was ready to be like, Maul, we can bury the hatchet however you want, whether you being buried literally or you take off, it's fine.
Yeah.
But the interesting bit there is that Maul still is Maul in that he reads you like a book. He knows your intentions. He knows what you're thinking. And that's the thing he kept. And Obi-Wan has kept being a protector of others. And he has gotten it down to that. And Maul has been practicing how to get someone's secrets and utilize them against them. Whereas Obi-Wan's like, I have learned to be the best protector the galaxy has ever had.
Mm. Yeah. Well, and their first duel was all about vengeance. Obi-Wan sees Maul kill Qui-Gon, leaps into action. He is out for blood. He's out for revenge. And this duel is about resignation. I think Obi-Wan has finally realized Maul will never stop coming after him. And as he says, it's time to mend this old wound. Mm-hmm. So that's why I say he's being merciful. He's like, you know what? It's closure. It's time to finish this story. It's been going on for 20 years too long.
It's closure. Oh, for sure. For sure. It's absolutely 100% closure because as much now as selfishly as I want to see Maul continue, this is the best way for him to have gone out. Now, I would have liked to have the fight scene to be more than a 3-second lunge, parry, stab type deal. You know, but again, that's me talking selfishly. But there's so much symmetry in this death scene because of the change of stance to the Qui-Gon. You know, you killed Qui-Gon with this. Now I'm going to defeat you with Qui-Gon's stance. And so there's symmetry and closure there. And then you have the fact that, you know, Pablo Hidalgo, who's, if you're familiar with Star Wars, you know who Pablo is. But he talked about how, and back in 2015, that the point of this episode was that Maul was brought back to life in animation. So it only made sense that he was killed for good in animation. And so there was closure and symmetry there. And, you know, there's so many things about this episode that really help you that set the table for things moving forward in Star Wars, in everything else we see, because now not only are we finding out that Anakin may not in fact be the chosen one, that there's a possibility of someone else being the chosen one. And that's what Obi-Wan's job is there in the desert. That's why he's hanging out there. And like Sam said, the absolute second that Maul says, or someone, boom, there goes the blue lightsaber. And I was like, oh, I remember the first time I was watching it, I'm like, oh, we're about to get a lightsaber fight. This is going to be so cool. And then I was like, wait.
Yeah.
Wait, what? Oh,
it was so good. It was so masterful. It was so poetic.
Yes, absolutely.
So speaking of the chosen one, do you two think that Obi-Wan reads that the chosen one is Luke? Or do you think that there's sort of conversations within conversations that they're having, and that who Maul thinks is the chosen one, who Qui-Gon thinks is the chosen one, who Obi-Wan thinks is the chosen one are all different? It might be the same person, but it's a different outcome or something else. Sorry, that was
that's a long question.
Really complicated way of asking the question. Yeah. who is the chosen one and why?
No, I understand what you're asking though. Well, for the longest time, I thought it was only Anakin, and that by the Anakin's actions and what he did is that's how he brought balance back to the Force. And then I thought for a while that it was Luke because of what Luke was doing. I honestly feel by the end of The Rise of Skywalker, it's honestly the chosen one is Leia.
Wow. Wait, I just got chills all over, but I don't know why. Tell me everything.
Well, Speak on it. That's several years of spoilers right there.
There's several years of spoilers ahead that I'm not going to go into.
No.
I will leave it at that for you and just say that there's a lot coming up where I watch it and I go, okay, Luke had his role. They all had their role to play and setting the table for the chosen one. If clearly, if Anakin and Padme didn't do what they did, we wouldn't have other possibilities of being the chosen one. Okay. But then when you have Luke, there's so much there where you could go, yeah, he was the chosen one. And look at all the great things that Luke did, and it makes sense. And he was so powerful with the Force and all these other things. Based on everything I watch in Star Wars, I don't always think that the most powerful Jedi is the one that's running around with the lightsabers doing the Force pushes and all these other things. There are other people who are Force sensitive who show greater skill and greater powers in other ways than just being able to, you know, move a rock with their mind or you know, be really good with a lightsaber. And so I will leave it at that. But I think Sam kind of knows where I'm getting at with this when I say that, in my mind, Leia is the chosen one.
Yeah, I hear you. And I also hear the Terra Sanube school of Jedi, which is that the will of the Force and the way of the Jedi are often not in perfect alignment. And so there are many, many ways for the universe to move forward.
Right.
It is interesting that's a very interesting take that unfortunately is beyond the scope of discussing further, but I like it.
This is the hardest part about being a new fan, is that people drop carrots for me all the time. And they're like, yep, well, you'll get to that in a year and a half.
That'll take more than that. We're a ways from Rise of Skywalker.
But you know what the great part is for me, Anna, is that I like to drop these little tidbits and carrots for things for you to look forward to. And I hope that I've never spoiled any of it for you moving forward.
Never once.
But
you're so good.
Well, good. Because I try very, very hard to not be that guy. But I am so excited for you and jealous of you being able to see this for the first time coming through. Because there's so much impactful story that's coming that is going to shift and change how you have seen things through the series that you've seen so far. And yeah, there's so much that's coming that's good and will help kind of explain a few things. But and I think that there's one other caveat to my explanation for the chosen one. Because of the way that prophecy was written and deciphered, even Yoda was confused by who the identity of the chosen one really was. I think, though, that identity shifted over time. I think it began with Anakin. I think it became Luke. And then I think it became Leia later on. And again, I'll leave it at that.
That actually tracks with a theory that we've been talking about a little bit during the course of the podcast. And I cannot remember if this was a George Lucas stance that he distanced himself from, or if this is just a theory floating around the internet. But the idea is that Obi-Wan believed Anakin was the chosen one because Qui-Gon believed that Anakin was the chosen one. And it was true. And then Anakin failed the prophecy. And so the Force had to will another chosen one into existence to sort of pick up the slack. And obviously, I have not finished Star Wars, and I just can't know if that's true. But I do love the idea that Anakin had an opportunity and squandered it, right?
So you guys are giving me... Oh, go ahead.
Or was that the will of the Force for Anakin to do what he did to set up Palpatine to be destroyed? You know,
once again, spoilers.
Potential. Yeah, I know. Sorry. I may have...
It's tough.
For other things, it is tough. This is harder than you give it credit for. But for other things to happen past that point.
Yeah.
You know, because in order for there to be balance, was there balance when Anakin did what he did? No, there was not balance in the Force. Would there be balance later through Luke? You'll find out. You'll find that out. You know, and so there's actions that are taken by certain characters that are determined by the will of the Force that have to set up other characters to do what they do, but it doesn't bring balance. The Chosen One was there to bring balance to the Force, to make things equal again. And at the fall of Anakin Skywalker, things are not equal.
So you guys have actually awakened some thoughts in my brain here, which is pretty impressive for a Saturday afternoon.
I dig it.
But okay, so... In this episode, in the previous episodes, the whole season 3 Maul arc, we've had Ezra and Maul working together, and they both ask a question of their Pizza Hut, Taco Bell combination of holocrons. And Maul's question is, where is Kenobi? And Ezra's question is, how do I destroy the Sith? And they both get the answer of someone on Tatooine. And that, like, that works for Maul. That's that. I mean, Maul's question is better. But then in this episode, it is revealed to Ezra by Kenobi. He's like, you asked a question, how to destroy the Sith. You didn't ask the question if you, Ezra Bridger, are the one to destroy the Sith. You are not supposed to be here. You have moved a lot of things around. And what that makes me think is that the Chosen One prophecy may fall into the same type of thing of its multiple questions being asked that are giving the same answer, except sort of maybe the opposite. It's the same question being asked and giving different answers, because in the Mortis arc, it is revealed that Anakin was supposed to get sucked into a Star Trek style alternate dimension and be shackled to some sort of dimensional force carburetor to make sure that there's the right amount of light and dark in the force. And he declines the call, and Sam Witwer, you know, kills his dad and shenanigans ensue because that's the son, father, and daughter situation. So then, does the Chosen One prophecy even end at that point? Or is there an additional Chosen One prophecy because the question has not resolved itself in a meaningful way, or the way that the question can be perceived is not meaningful? Because that's, like, has always historically been the fun part about prophecy, is that you don't recognize if a prophecy can be accurate until literally the moment it's happening, because it's always going to have some sort of sneaky, ironic twist.
Was there a question mark, or is that a commentary?
That was a commentary.
Yeah.
It's a bit of both. It's a bit of both. Yeah, honestly, I get with a lot of that. I think that what you have happening is you have one answer, but I think the question, the formulation to the question changes as Star Wars evolves. Mm-hmm. As we go through the series, I think we see more from this character, that character, and how it addresses who the, it's almost like smoke and mirrors a little bit as to who the Chosen One is going to be, because the will of the Force is showing it over here, like, oh, look over here, but don't look over here. There's nothing going on over here. You don't need to see this. I'm waving and gesticulating wildly, as Anna would say, with both hands. So there's a lot going on. And each time that we see a shift in who the Chosen One might be, there's things happening by the will of the Force. And right now we're seeing the will of the Force. We've seen it go from Anakin, and we're seeing it shift to Luke through this episode, mm-hmm. because that's where Obi-Wan has to be by will of the Force to protect the Chosen One, who is now Luke Skywalker, you know, and we see him at the end, you know, running in the little silhouette running across the sand dunes back into, you know, Aunt Beru. Hmm.
I also want to touch on the Greater Rebellion before we wrap up, because we cut that discussion off earlier, speaking of how this moves the rebellion along, because they are down an A-Wing, which is a real bummer, but they did get a Gauntlet class ship, which is an upgrade.
Yeah, I mean, I guess my big question is, Ezra is part of the rebellion, obviously. He's a lieutenant, which I was reminded about this episode. So the death of Maul, I guess my question is, does the death of Maul in any way accelerate or boost the rebellion, or was he really just interested in Ezra?
He did have that kill switch, right? He did have a transmitter dialed to a dead man switch to send to the Empire, hey, it's this is the rebel base. And now presumably that is not going off. So as far as I know, that's the only direct connection that Maul had to the rebellion, because he doesn't care about the rebellion.
Well, and how about Obi-Wan's continued refusal to join the rebellion? I mean, what if, I guess when Tim was talking about wanting more from the lightsaber duel between Maul and Obi-Wan, I was thinking I was craving more interaction between Ezra and Obi-Wan. I mean, they get such a short scene, and it feels like Obi-Wan means so much to Ezra as truly one of the only Jedi who belongs to the rebellion. So what does it mean that Obi-Wan continues to refuse to be a joiner.
Well, I think that Ezra's always desirous of connection. And so he wants connection to Obi, because not even from the found family aspect. He's looking for connection to purpose. And he sees Obi-Wan as connection to purpose. That's how I view that. Obi-Wan, however, refuses to join because his sense of duty would not allow him to abandon Luke. His sense of duty, if there wasn't a Luke in the equation, I think that Obi-Wan would have joined. I think Obi-Wan would have, because he fights for things that are right. He defends things that are right. He stands up for the little guy. He protects. Like Sam said earlier, he's a protector. That's in his nature. And so he's going, as a Jedi and as one of the most, you know, when you talk about Jedi, one of the first names that always comes up in any discussion, like, who's the prime example of a Jedi? Obi-Wan, because of Obi-Wan, the way he is. Now, had he not had the sense of purpose in protecting Luke and seeing that goal through to fruition, I think that he probably would have been a joiner. But because he had that, I don't think he's going anywhere.
I wonder if without Luke, or if Luke was a few years older or something, that perhaps a side of Obi-Wan would have been a little turned off by the politics of the rebellion as it is, because we are just one episode removed from Mon Mothma becoming the political face of the rebellion. And up until this point, the rebellion has had such luminary faces as Saw Gerrera. And we know that, you know, Obi-Wan and Saw Gerrera have met, and I don't think Obi-Wan was impressed. And so if the rebellion is made up of a bunch of Saw Gerreras, I think that Obi-Wan might be like, let's work with my old buddy Bail Organa from within,
right,
to make something happen. Who, Bail is name dropped in this episode, because Rex is like, I talked to Bail and he says that Obi-Wan's dead. I knew Obi-Wan. He was great. Wish he was here. RIP.
Right. Yeah, I think that based on, I don't think that him and Saw aren't going out for a spot of tea anytime soon. But I think if he were able to work with Bail directly, and he would, I could see him being a part of the Phoenix Squadron pretty easily as an old man mentor, especially because that would have been helpful for Kanan as well. That was something that Kanan was still needing, was direction and bring balance to him as a Jedi, to center him into what he was trying to teach Ezra. But as far as the political side of this newfound rebellion, he would have stayed away from it as much as possible, mm-hmm. because that just wasn't him. Even in episode 3, the movie, he's like, you go enjoy your day with the politics, the politicians.
I'm not brave enough for that.
Exactly. He's trying to stay as far away from that as he can. And I don't think that that's going to change, you know, but just because he had a few years in the desert.
Devastating that he loved a literal duchess.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he probably didn't love her because she was a duchess.
That's fair. Yeah. Or he loved her because she could handle all of the duchess stuff and he could just be Obi-Wan.
Yeah.
Well, it's about time.
Time for Baywatch?
It's about time to pick our bay on Baywatch.
Hope you're ready, Tim. We're riding the wave.
All right. It's Baywatch.
All right, Tim, as our guest, why don't you start us off with who's getting added to Baywatch?
I'll give you 3 guesses as to who it is, and your first 2 don't count. It's his final appearance in Star Wars.
Is it Martha Dahl?
Exactly. My boy Martha Dahl.
Good choice.
Always Darth Maul. If I can pick Darth Maul, I'll pick Darth Maul.
Tell us, describe for us, if you will, like, succinctly tell us why Darth Maul in particular this episode.
Because it's the symmetry. It's the conclusion of his storyline. It's knowing that other than going back and watching him in previous episodes, I'm never going to see him in canon again. There's no logical, viable reason to ever bring Darth Maul back into storyline from this point forward. His story ran its route, it hit its end, it was It was succinct. It was beautiful. It was perfect. Allow that to be the end. And so for as much as I love Darth Maul and I love what Sam Witwer brought to that character and how he voiced it and the emotion and everything that you see through him, or of him rather, through Clone Wars and Rebels, this is a perfect send-off. And so for that reason, it need, for me, in my mind, in this episode, it needs to be Darth Maul.
That's a good choice. That's a good choice.
Darth Maul is always baby. I do like him.
Anna, who's your choice for Baywatch?
Once again, I have been so not full of surprises for Rebels. It's got to be Obi-Wan. Hmm. Obi-Wan is so baby. Obi-Wan is wise and prepared and has been sitting in the desert for how many years at this point? 20?
About 15 with a break to go rescue baby Leia.
Yeah, and he has been sitting and communing with Qui-Gon and thinking about how to be more prepared than everybody else in the entire galaxy. And he is so excellent, and he is so... I love the moment when Ezra says, "I brought trouble to your doorstep. I will fix it." And Obi-Wan says, "No, I'm the adult here. This is not your burden to bear. I'm not going to make you grow up too fast. I'm going to take care of this for you." And I think that is such a loving, grown-up thing to do for a young person. Ezra and Luke are the same age. They're within days of each other. Yeah, and it's nice that someone is not making Ezra be an adult and saying, "You get to have a little bit of your childhood left. I'm not going to make you do this." That's beautiful, and that's responsible, and that's bay-worthy to me.
Well, I'm also choosing Obi-Wan.
Yes.
I'm reminded of one of my very, very favorite books is The Book of Five Rings by Miyamoto Musashi. And he's the preface, this guy who died in like 1558 in Japan, is talking about how he's basically been living in a cave, practicing his calligraphy and painting and working on a manual for sword fighting. And as he reads through it, he's talking about setting the intention and always having a spirit. And if you have a strong enough spirit and can perceive spirit well enough, people will like come to fight you and run away. And just for the move of the fact that this duel not only takes place in three moves, it takes place in the move before those three moves as they're scoping each other out. And it also actually takes place in every single moment from Qui-Gon's death until now. It makes this whole thing, as you said, Tim, bookended beautifully. And the story of Maul, as you know, initially like, oh, he's a scary guy to have a very fun lightsaber fight in Phantom Menace with. But then you change that into Maul is an interesting character with his own motivations, but he is still defeated not just by his own ambitions and failures, but by the true hero of the Republic, Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Mm. Yeah, I give Maul a lot of flack for sort of feeding his life into the meat grinder that was revenge against Kenobi. And the flip side to that is Kenobi living his life in a way that he is masterful enough, skillful enough, and prepared enough to just make such short work of his ostensibly greatest enemy. That's so beautiful. That's so cool. I love it. Okay, next week, what are we watching?
Next week, we are finishing off season 3 of Rebels with part 1 and part 2 of 0 Hour. That's episode 21 and 22.
Tim, do you have any words of advice? Do you have any thoughts? What should I know going into the end of season 3?
Buckle up for season 4. That's all I'll say. Zero Hour definitely sets the table for what's coming in season 4.
I'm just so excited for Rebels to have hit its incredibly powerful stride, not just from moving through the rest of Maul's arc, which we did leave season 7 of The Clone Wars on, you know, what's he up to? He just used a door to kill a bunch of clone troopers and then he ran off. Like, he's a scary dude. And now we have completed that. We have completed Obi-Wan's story up until the original trilogy. We have completed so much, but we still have a little bit to go. And we're telling such a delightful story. I'm like grateful to be here because it's been such a ride from the get-go. It was like, this is fun and happy. And now it's like, this was real tense, but it's still absolutely rewarding.
Yeah. Season 3 into season 4, it gets tense. There's high emotion. But there's some phenomenal storytelling that's coming. And it's Rebels is far better animation, a series, whether animation or live action, than people ever give it credit for. And in my mind, it's one of those things it's peak Star Wars in my mind. It's because of the things that this little series of 4 seasons of animation set up in the movies and the other TV shows. Things could not have happened without Rebels. And it's hugely impactful because of that.
For sure. Tim, where can we find you on the web? Or, you know, where do you live?
No, do not tell people where you live. We do not do that.
I live in Michigan. I say that all the time, so you can know that.
Okay.
So, Michigan. But on the interwebs, come find us at www.fsfpopcast.com, or you can find us at any of your favorite social media providers. At FSF Popcast is our user handle. I think on everything, if I was smart, I might not have been, but I think it's all at FSF Popcast. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter/X, whatever you call that thing nowadays. Blue Sky. We still do something over on Blue Sky, I think. Anyway, but yeah, you can find us there.
What is some exciting news or content that you have coming down the pipeline that people should get hyped for?
That you should get hyped for from us. Well, you would ask. My brain just went kaputs as soon as you... Hold on, I'm looking. Because we're all coming out of almost like podcast hibernation because we've had a couple shoulder surgeries on our end.
That's true.
But very excited because we just had Bill Farmer, the voice of Goofy, on our show.
Oh, cool.
One of the things that I'm very excited coming up, we've got a gentleman named Daniel Bowman coming. He's one of the suits you see, the droids on all the live action TV shows. He's one of those droids.
Ooh.
And so we talked to him about that. We talked to him about, you know, being all these different things. He had a part in a Star Wars fanfic called Sands of Fate. We talked to him about that. That one was really very cool. If you're a Star Trek fan, we just talked with Larry Nemechek, also known as Dr. Trek. He has one of the largest depths of knowledge of Star Trek stuff that I think that I have ever seen. I was talking with Kathleen and John and Ben from FSF Podcast that he's like the Sam Witwer of Star Trek. He's got that level of knowledge. I mean, we just in talking with him, he's rattling off, there was this thing and this nebula of this thing and the other world and the thing and the ship and the thing. And I was like, great. Yeah, sounds good, buddy. Was Captain Kirk there? Okay, no? Okay. That's about where I'm still learning the Trek. I am far off on the Trek knowledge, but he's got it in spades, but yeah. And then we've got a bunch of interviews that I don't want to say who they are yet because I haven't recorded them yet. And we're a couple of them we're still working on landing, so.
Cool.
I would also say for Star Wars fans, you've had so many incredible Star Wars voice actors on the show. So my personal favorite was Anna Graves, who is, of course, the voice of Duchess Satine. I think you've done multiple interviews with Sam Witwer. Is that true or just the one?
Well, Sam's been on our show twice, once for an interview with him, but then we had him on our live show with his brother. Well, his brother Michael couldn't make it that night, but John Peterson and Kyle Newman, the director of the movie Fanboys, which, by the way, if you're a Star Wars fan and you have not watched Fanboys, as soon as this is over, go rent it, watch it. Do yourself a favor, just go buy it. You'll love it. Anyway, but Kyle, they all wrote some D&D stuff together. They have a couple D&D books, D&D cookbooks, Art and Arcana. Yeah, I can't think of all the, you know, but yeah, there's a really cool D&D series that they've all worked on. And they, yeah, so I had Sam on for that as well. So we really didn't talk Star Wars that night because it was mostly a D&D conversation and I was trying to keep things in their lane, but yeah, we've had now from Star Wars Rebels, we've had Taylor Gray, the voice of Ezra Bridger. Mm-hmm. We've had Vanessa Marshall, Harris Adula. I think that from that show, that's it.
And you've had authors on the show as well. Did you have Claudia Gray?
Claudia Gray. Yeah. We just talked with her a little bit ago. Yeah, we've had Justina Ireland. I love Justina. She's a hoot. Adam Christopher, who wrote the book that's the prequel, or the basic, essentially the prequel going into the sequel trilogies. It's the book that leads up into The Force Awakens. We've had Kristen Baver. We've had John Jackson Miller, who's written a couple different Star Wars books. Daniel Jose Older, who's the lead story architect for the High Republic. We've had him on our show. There's a couple others in that line that I'm working on and I'm hoping to. We've also had Gary Whitta, who was the co-writer for Rogue.
Wow.
God, it's just a who's who of Star Wars.
Yeah. So if you want more in that vein, check out the FSF podcast. A huge backlog of really, really delightful stuff. And as you say, all dirty, no nerdy. All nerdy, no dirty.
You might want to flip those.
It's a really fun experience to listen to. And it's very informative.
Yeah, Tim is a phenomenal interviewer. He just asks good questions. You just ask good questions, Tim.
Aw, thank you. We try.
So that's FSF Podcast. Please go check them out. Obviously, the credentials speak for themselves. And if you love Growing Up Skywalker, there are a couple of ways that you can support us as well. Please follow us on social media. We're on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and Threads.
We're also on Patreon, where we do most of our non-canon stuff and occasionally have Naval History Minutes or hour-long book reports or all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, we have a lot of fun on the Patreon. We swear we let our hair down. It is a lot of fun for as little as $3.
It's groovy.
Yeah, Tim's one of our patrons, which is so, so kind. Thank you, Tim.
Heck yeah, the Spice Run, that's a staple in my life at this point.
We do love Spice Run. We think about Spice Run all the time. So for as little as $3 a month, you can become one of our patrons there. And make sure to drop us 5 stars and leave us a love note on your podcast platform of choice. It just helps us to get into the earbuds of new listeners.
And send this episode to someone who has finally vanquished a foe of their entire lifetime.
Ugh. Bonus points if the foe is like metaphorical, like perfectionism.
And double bonus points if it's some scary person.
Yeah. If you vanquished a Sith, you should listen to this episode.
Yeah, you should.
And we'll talk to you next Tuesday.
Bye-bye.